now, Tom McConnell.
6 minutes after 10 o'clock. Well, it's not only politicians' wallets that have to slim down. It's our own waistlines. Wow. Is that the best segue ever from 2 hours? Pat's giving me the look like, seriously? That was your segue? That was a terrible segue. That was the worst segue. We should switch spots based on that segue right there.
We could, if you really wanted to.
All right. I really don't want to, because your job is work. Your job is work, not mine. Joining us back on the program again, nutritional consultant, healthy living advocate, Pam Colleen. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you today, Tom?
I am excellent, Pam. For full disclosure, let me tell you, I've been on exactly one diet, and it started in January when I hurt my shoulder, and I decided, you know what, now that I can't move the weights, I'm going to lose a little weight, and I actually lost 15 pounds, and it wasn't that difficult. And all I did was count my calories.
Uh-huh.
Now, was I doing it right, or is there a better way to lose weight? Because I know we want to talk about fad diets and what to look out for now, but when you set up for your clients, and I'm sure some of them want to lose weight, what's the first thing you try to establish for them?
Well, what I basically encourage people to do is eat 3 square meals a day, and through that, we know when we ate 3 square meals a day, we were actually... sugar levels. And so, Gary Taubes, he writes about this in his books, Good Calories, Bad Calories, and his newest book, Why We Get Fat. And even as late as the 1800s, there were researchers who were using animal fats in order to help weight loss. And unfortunately, what happened in the 1800s is we start to see the displacement of meat and its replacement with things like wheat. And so carbohydrates, even in the 1800s, were driving weight gain. And, of course, in the last 100 years, in the last 50 years, we've seen an even greater increase in our consumption of things like grains, wheat, for example. And so this is really what's contributing to weight gain, because it really throws off blood sugar levels.
Now, when you say 3 square meals, first let's focus on the number 3. Can I snack between meals?
Well, you know, it really depends on every individual I work with. If some people are terribly disabled with chronic fatigue, depression, anxiety, whatever the case may be, if they're, you know, displaying severe symptoms, then they may need a snack mid-morning, mid-afternoon,
okay,
and even before bed. And, of course, that snack needs to include a lot of animal fat, animal protein in there to help stabilize blood sugar levels.
But breakfast, when you talk about 3, it means you're having a solid breakfast, a solid lunch, and a solid dinner.
Yes, and for every person, that should be the main goal in the day. And, unfortunately, what is being encouraged is 3 low-fat meals. That is what's being encouraged, and that is not a square meal. A low-fat meal is not a square meal.
When you talk about square, define to me your when people say, "All right, so I got to eat 3 square meals a day." It doesn't mean 3 overwhelming huge portions, 2 steaks, and I can do that. But define square. What is your best when you talk to people about? Okay, here's what you should be looking to put on your plate if you want to have a well balanced, healthy diet. What's your square?
Well, it should be centered in and around animal foods. So the portion of animal food should look like the size of the back of your hand. It should be about the same size as the back of your hand.
So about a fistful.
Fistful or so, yes.
About fist size, I should say, not a fistful.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly. You know, it could be 3-4 ounces. It really depends on your size. It may be larger depending, of course, if you're a big guy. So at any rate, that's what the meal should be centered in around. So for breakfast, for example, that might be, you know, 2 or 3 eggs. If it's 2 eggs or one egg. Maybe you want to add some sausage or bacon or whatever to the picture, and that's fine. And, of course, if you're adding fruits and vegetables, of course, they should be the darker colored fruits and vegetables, because then, of course, you're going to get more antioxidants that way as well. And you know, don't be afraid of eating steak, and don't be afraid of eating, eggs and bacon and sausage, all of these foods which have been heavily demonized. Unfortunately, these are the foods that we really do need in order to help stabilize our nervous systems.
Now, when you talk about, don't be afraid of these, but also you put in there about the size of your fist. And right. So that's one of the things that you have to look at. That two eggs probably fills up the size of my fist, maybe a couple pieces of bacon, or if I want a chicken breast, don't have three. Make sure that it's animal protein has to be included, but it's of a certain proportion. This is not a license to eat whatever you want as long as it's animal-based, correct?
Right, and if you're eating chicken, make sure you're eating the skin, because you really, really want that animal fat.
Really? The skin, eh?
Absolutely, okay. Because what's missing and what has been missing for several decades from our diet is the consumption of saturated fat. And so we need the saturated fat in order to satisfy our appetites. And so what researchers are showing now is that if you reduce your saturated fat intake, you're going to be a lot hungrier, eat more, and gain weight. So we need the animal fats to satisfy our hunger messages from the brain. So and this is common sense. If you look at the word saturated, think of the word satisfy, sated, satiety, right? You want to satisfy your appetite by eating adequate amounts of animal fat. And I'm European descent. I'm Irish and Scottish descent. And what that means for me is that my diet should be about 70%. I should be getting about 70% of my calories from animal fat.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Now, when we look at our when we come back, we'll look at some of the fad diets and what you want to look out for. But as well, you've talked about clarify for me for one thing. People think about protein as being when we break down protein into amino acids, that's the building block for almost all of our body. And then carbohydrates, though, don't build anything, but they're energy. And so if we have excess energy, we store it into fat. But why do we need fats? What do fats don't turn into fat, but you talk about animal fats and saturated fats. What does the body use them for? What do we take these fat molecules and turn them into in our body?
Well, actually, fat is our energy source. We've been wrongly taught that sugar is for energy, but it's actually fat that gives us long sustained energy. If you want to use the analogy of a log on a fire, is the analogy of having animal fat in your diet. That gives you a long sustained energy source. Carbohydrates are like putting kindling on a fire. They give you short bursts of energy and unfortunately destabilize your nervous system while they do that. So we're actually supposed to be fat burners, not sugar burners. And unfortunately, this is really a myth. When I see athletes, for example, loading up on all these sugary drinks and pastas and things like that, they're going to make themselves sicker in the long run. I teach the work of Dr. Weston A. Price, who studied primitive cultures. And in primitive cultures where, they didn't have a lot of propaganda because they didn't have media, they didn't
right,
have universities.
Exactly.
Well, guess what they used for energy? Guess what their top athletes used for energy? It was things like raw cream. So whether they were Maasai in Africa or whether they were the Swiss athletes in small villages, they would train by drinking raw cream prior to any kind of event or training session. And so that's what's going to give you long sustained energy is those animal fats.
But in your book, in one of your books, we also use in animal fats, doesn't the body use it to make cellular membranes? And you talk about helping out the nervous system. What components are in there? Or is it simply that we're more stable and we're better with these long-burning energy?
No, that's a loaded question, because you're right. Within the fats, you have lots and lots of building blocks for what makes us human. So you have things like the long-chain fatty acids, things like DHA and arachidonic acid, which are crucial for the formation of our brains, basically. And then you have the fat-soluble vitamins like vitamin A and vitamin D, which have their own roles in terms of supporting your nervous systems. And so within the fats is really just a cornucopia of very, very important nutrients that support the human being. And unfortunately, because we have been reducing our consumption of animal fats in our diets over the last 50 years, of course, we're much sicker than we ever have ever been before in the history of mankind.
And when we talk about, before we go away to break, one of those key components that we talk about are omega-3 fatty acids. And one of the chief, I mean, when you look at your own northern European diet, found in such foods like salmon, that,
right.
that our ancestors were reliant on foods like salmon, which were rich in omega-3s and which help out not only our heart, but our brain as well.
That's right. And that's why the Irish have a reputation as being alcoholics, is because when in Ireland, hunting and fishing became banned, of course, that reduced their consumption of the omega-3 fatty acids, which obviously would have negatively affected their moods. And so they gravitated to alcohol as their medicine to basically medicate themselves from the depression they were feeling, because they weren't getting enough of those long-chain fatty acids from eating things like wild fish and wild game.
Pam Killeen's a nutritional consultant, healthy living advocate, joins me on the program again this week, and we're talking about diets and what you should be looking for in your diet. But then when we come back, Pam, talk to me about fad diets, okay?
Absolutely.
What to look out for and what their downfall is, because I got to point out, though, one of the diet you recommend looks like a fad diet we're very familiar with in the media. But you point out, see if I've guessed it right, or see what the shortcomings are when we come back. 1017 is our time. My name's Tom McConnell. This is News Talk 610 CKTV. 1021 is our time. Nutritional consultant, healthy living advocate, Pam Killeen joins us on the program. Pam, for full disclosure, let me ask you, do you receive any money from the Egg Marketing Board or the Ontario Pork Producers?
Not at all, no.
Okay.
I'm actually a victim of following fad diets myself. You know, I had chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, multiple chemical sensitivities. I basically collapsed in the late 80s, was terribly, terribly sick, and stayed, you know, disabled for about 12 years. And through that time frame, tried various fad diets in order to help get me healthy. And
yeah.
Unfortunately, the choices I made actually backfired and made me much sicker. And, you know, these diets were touted as being healthy diets. And they were, now that I know what I know, I see now that they were diametrically opposed to a healthy diet. So what happened was, is, you know, over 10 years ago now, I actually decided that I wasn't going to be fooled. I wasn't going to let myself be fooled again. And so I just dove that much deeper into studying nutrition and diet on my own, and to discover the many, many things that I'll be talking about on this show. So it all comes down to common sense. And unfortunately, that common sense or that wisdom has been stripped from our brains, from our consciousness. And so the answers inherently are very, very simple. But it's man, it's marketing that has made them very, very complicated.
Now, before the break, you were talking about, you know, three square meals a day, and make sure you get a lot of your calories from protein or animal fat sources. Oftentimes they're combined. It sounds an awful like the Atkins diet, which was heavy on animal proteins and fats. I mean, is Atkins that far off, or is there something missing there?
Well, there is something missing from his philosophy. He was close, but he really wasn't as close as one would want. You know, he was really, really very, very low on the carbohydrate end. And I'm basically saying, you know, we can enjoy the fruits and vegetables, because certainly within the fruits and vegetables today, even more so than ever before, we need the antioxidants to help preserve these wonderful, precious fats that we're getting from the animal foods. That's essentially the role that they play. So we should be enjoying, you know, the deep colored fruits and vegetables. We just don't want to eat a lot of them. I agree with him on that. We don't want to eat a lot of fruits and vegetables simply because they're a source of sugar. And we don't want to eat too much sugar, because that's very, very hard on, you know, our pancreas. It's very hard on insulin levels. So that's why three square meals is a wonderful platform to launch from, simply because you get your animal fats and protein to stabilize blood sugar. You get some fruits and vegetables to provide the antioxidants to help preserve the fats.
When you look at diets or fat diets, or you look at, you know, you go to a bookstore and there's a whole shelf filled with, this is the way you should be eating. What's the worst offender to you? Who's the book you should burn?
Oh my goodness, the book to burn today is called Skinny Bitch, and basically
catchy title though.
Oh, and they're going after young men, too. And unfortunately, what's going to happen with young girls who are really the targets of this book, these young girls are going to end up with serious mood disorders and infertility.
But they're going to be skinny.
And, well, that's because girls today in high school, when they're surveyed, of course, they've been surveyed on this issue. And the three most important things to young girls today is to be skinny, to be pretty, and to be nice. And unfortunately, what this is going to do is by having skinniness as their goal and to do it through a vegan or a vegetarian diet, a very strict vegetarian diet, is going to starve their brains and to set them up for all sorts of mood disorders, whether it's that they're neurotic, obsessive-compulsive, depressed, anxious, sleep disordered. It's going to set them up for all sorts of mood problems. And worse than that, even infertility, in a sense. I mean, these young girls are not going to be able to procreate if they read books like that and follow the advice in these books.
Pam, talking to you and reading some of your stuff, I think, you know, there's a common theme in that while we're trying to make our bodies thin, we're also, and you just pointed out, you're starving your brain. Like, I mean, you're trying to point out a balanced way. Hey, listen, your brain needs all this stuff, and your body can be healthy too, that our obsession with trying to be skinny, and here's the title, skinny bitch, you're actually going about it the wrong way, because in the end, you're not going to be happy. In fact, you're going to make things worse, because let's say it works. Let's say you lose that magical 10 pounds. You're going to be miserable, though, and you're going to bring with it a lot of problems, mentally, not and physically, I mean, long-term, but short-term, if you're looking to lose weight, I mean, you're setting yourself up for long-term brain problems.
Absolutely. There's no question about that. And just so we define for your audience what I mean by a fad diet, because this is really, really important. If you have this information, you can wrap your brain around this, you can actually protect yourself and your family for future references, right? So if a fad diet is something that has absolutely no longevity, has absolutely no proof in the long run that it can sustain the human being.
It's flavor of the moment, and some celebrity has said, it's worked for me.
And that doesn't prove a thing, all right? It doesn't prove a thing. So what you need to do is look at cultures who have been following a diet for centuries, for generations. And then you study that culture to see if the couples are fertile, the babies are healthy, that you don't see chronic disease or mental illness, and you notice that the aging age very, very gracefully and even into their senior years are productive members of society. So you need to use those parameters to decide if the nutritional information you're getting is actually valid. And just using those parameters and wrapping your brain around them right now should tell you a lot. It should warn you that most of the nutritional information you're hearing today is not valid.
Pam Colleen, do you have time to join us after the break?
I sure do.
All right, let's talk a little bit more about fad diets, what to look for and what to look out for when we come back. Because as you said, Atkins was close, but not quite there. So maybe if you tweak Atkins, you can get a better diet. But here's one to burn, the Skinny Bitch book. Get that out of your library. That's not going to help you in the long term. Short term, if you want to lose 5 pounds, any diet will work. Long term, if you want to keep the weight off and, as Pam points out, maintain not only heart health and colon health, but brain health. It's all about brain health. We'll talk more with Pam Colleen when we come back. This is News Talk 610 CKTB. Continuing her visit on the program, nutritional consultant Pam Colleen, healthy living advocate, telling us what to watch out for when we're going on a diet. Well, I mean, going on a diet's no problem. If you want to lose weight, that's great. That's a step in the right direction. But watch out for fad diets. And Pam, before the break, was telling us Atkins was close, maybe a little low on the carbohydrates. Skinny Bitch is a terrible diet. And you're telling me the Duchess of Cambridge, the former Kate Middleton, is she on a fad diet of some sort?
Yes, in preparation for her wedding, it was announced in the media that she was following this very popular European diet that's hitting the bookshelves today, and it's called the Duquesne diet. And
now, wait a second. Wasn't that guy in... Is he involved in a lawsuit?
I don't know about the author. I just know he's a French doctor, and he's saying that this diet is based in medicine, which makes me kind of... cringe at the thought of that, because again, there's no historical reference to say that this diet can sustain a human for generations. Unfortunately, what the diet is doing is it's promoting, again, this dangerous low-fat message. On top of that, a high-fiber, high-protein type of diet. And of course, you don't want to... protein is okay, but you have to have the animal fats there with it. And he's demonizing the animal fat message with that diet. And on top of that, promoting copious quantities of fiber in the diet, which is totally... totally unhealthy route to go. And I can, you can go back into history to see how this fiber message began and to see how skewed it is today. You know, if you look at Sylvester Graham in the early 1800s, he was really one of the first proponents of a high fiber diet. And he did it because he was promoting, guess what, you know, the Graham flour, the Graham cracker. And in order to sell his product, he demonized animal foods. And he promoted the high-fiber diet in order to curb lust. So, Tom, people need to be warned. They need to be warned that, you know, this high-fiber diet, in terms of its historical reference, its beginnings, was to bring down your libido, okay?
It's not what I'm looking to do here.
No.
I'm over 40.
Anybody, if they knew the consequences of following a high-fiber diet, they would not do it, unfortunately, because there are products that go around the sale of that or the promotion of that these high-fiber diets. There's money to be made, and fiber has become sexy, and it's a multi-billion dollar industry, and so people are buying into it simply because the people promoting this high fiber concept are paying for their own science to promote it, and there's absolutely no logic behind it whatsoever.
How much fiber do I need, though? I think I need some fiber in my diet, correct?
Some fiber is okay, but you have to remember that fiber is indigestible. It's roughage. Think of the synonym. It's roughage, and so it does not digest. So,
but I'm trying. Don't I use it to clean out my intestinal tract, my colons? Isn't fiber? It's always promoted as a great way to promote regularity and to help the body rid of waste.
Well, that's how it's promoted. Unfortunately, there's not a whole heck of a lot of foundation behind a lot of that, because fiber essentially slows down what is known as gut motility, slows down the speed at which you clean yourself out, basically. And it's animal fats that actually increase gut motility. So again, we're being misinformed in terms of what helps digestion. Fiber slows down your digestion, and that's not necessarily what you want to do. There are a lot of myths in and around the benefits of fiber. You know, the fiber industry is promoting fiber as being something that's heart healthy, that brings down cholesterol, that controls your blood sugar, that does all this wonderful, they claim that it does all this wonderful stuff, but none of it is actually true. When you dig into the research, you'll find out that all of these claims that the fiber industry is making is basically, it's mythical, you know? So be careful of fiber, because it is roughage and it does slow down your digestion. And what ends up happening is when you're taking medicinal fiber in particular, any kind of medicinal fiber, you get stuck in a type of vicious cycle where you take fiber initially, it slows down your digestion, you get constipated, and then you take more fiber and you get more constipated. So most people, what they'll tell you in the end is that they get more constipated the longer that they're taking fiber, and more bloated, more hemorrhoids, whatever the case may be. They end up worse off taking medicinal fiber. A little bit of fiber is fine in the diet when you're getting it from whole fruits and vegetables, for example. And even the National Cancer Institute really only recommends about 20 to 30 grams of fiber in your diet, which would be about 5 or 6 servings of fruits, vegetables, and even maybe some grain. It's not a lot of fruits, vegetables, and grain that you need in order to get
the adequate
20
fiber.
To 30 grams
right.
of fiber.
Darko in Etobicoke, how are you? You got a question or a comment for Pam?
No, I agree 100% with her. I would say, like, in the fruits and vegetables, I definitely like salad greens are the big ones that we should be eating as far as getting our that bit of our diet. But I switched to where I was no more cereal for breakfast. I eat 2-3 eggs if I have some bacon or whatever. Not every morning I have bacon, but maybe I have a bit of cottage cheese or whatever. And in 10 weeks, I lost about 15 pounds.
That's right.
So, and I feel great. You know, I want to talk about my bowel movements, which are not that they were bad, but, you know, but I mean, I, honestly, like for cleanup, everything is much better. Everything, you know, my pants are looser. I only weighed about 218 before. Now I'm around 203. I'm 6'2", so I'm not what's called obese or anything. But, you know, I wanted to get down into the 190s, just feel that a little bit lighter. And I find like breakfast is number one. Don't eat cereals. Cereals and breads are like bad news. Maybe for some people, you know, when I was younger, you don't put weight on or whatever, but at some point, I think it does catch up to you.
That's right. Our metabolism changes as we get older. When we're young, we tend to be what are known as fast oxidizers, so we burn our fuel quite efficiently when we're young, and as we age, we naturally become what are known as slow oxidizers. And so, yes, it, you know, it can be a challenge to maintain a healthy weight. And I say healthy weight, not low weight, not skinniness, perhaps thin or a little bit overweight is healthy. But absolutely, you know, sometimes you have to be a little bit more conscientious in terms of your diet when you're older just because of the aging factor.
Sure. And I would also make a point. I was reading one book and it sort of dawned on me, yeah, this makes sense. But the types of fruits and vegetables that we meet to eat, the variety, and how they're being bred. I was talking to the call speaker about grapes, for instance, which I just find just tastes like a, really, it's a ball of sugar what they've bred now. So compared to the Concord grapes that you guys have in Niagara that we sometimes get here for a couple months, you know, the difference in the bitterness and sweetness, everything is super sweet, whether it's an orange, the new apples, you know, compared to the russets and the northern spies and that, which are have more, I guess, a, they're not just a sweet apple. They have some other element, maybe more pectin or whatever in there, I think are better for us, right? So, you know, like you said, everything in the food industry is to get you to buy more. And, again, with carbohydrates, my big thing is if I eat, like, cereal, 10 minutes, 15 minutes later, I want to eat again.
Right, and that has a lot to do with, again, the blood sugar control. And when I say carbohydrates, about fruits, vegetables, and grains, because all three of those categories are sources of sugar. And I see a lot of people making mistakes by eating a lot of carrots or beets or carrot juice or beet juice, and they're taking in way too much sugar, even in doing something that is supposed to be healthy, which is juicing. And I don't let any of my students juice. I take them away from that because juicing vegetables even, it could be a potentially high source for a lot of sugar and therefore be very, very hard on your pancreas. So make sure that when you say the word carbohydrate, you include fruits and vegetables. It's not just about grains. And that, you know, what I tell people is just to be very careful in terms of overeating any or all of those categories of food.
Pam Colleen, nutritional consultant, healthy living advocate, talking to us about diets and what to look out for and the fad diets. I got a question from Jimmy. Have you read the China Report? What are your thoughts on the Thrive Diet?
Well, the Thrive Diet, I think that one is probably a vegan if it's based on the China study. And again, a vegan diet really has no historical precedence. There are no records of any vegan cultures anywhere on this planet. And so, again, if you're following a vegan diet, it's a very, very risky diet. Most of the people who come to me for help are recovering vegetarians, but mostly the ones who run into the most trouble are going to be the vegans who have removed animal foods from their diet entirely. Unfortunately, this type of vegan diet is being painted as being healthy, and nothing could be further from the truth. I'm a recovering vegan myself. I followed that diet thinking it was a healthy diet, and of course, it totally backfired on me. So I could write a book on this subject and warn people.
Maybe it's your next one.
Pardon me?
Maybe it's your next one.
Yeah, really
I'm a recovering vegetarian.
Yeah, there's another recovering vegan by the name of Lear Keith who wrote a book called The Vegetarian Myth. And she really goes into some of these myths in and around the alleged healthfulness of a vegetarian diet. And so that's a good book if you want to refer to that. But the China study, there's at least three very formal rebuttals online refuting that study. It's very, very flawed. The notion that they can live healthfully on a soy-based diet is just not true. Anytime I've been on, been to a Chinese restaurant, of course, they have fowl, they have fish, they have meat, they have shellfish, they have all sorts of animal foods on the menu.
Yeah.
Simply because the Chinese diet does include lots of animal fat and protein and very, very small amounts of soy.
Here's one from David says, Tom, can you please ask about eating for your blood type? I've seen this as well, and I never understood what it meant. I guess, is the diet specified whether you're A, B, A, B, O, positive, negative?
No. I'm not a big fan of that diet simply because, dogs even have different blood types. this notion that, we come from different blood types and that means we're supposed to be a certain diet. You know what? We were all hunter-gatherers, every single one of us. We all come from a hunter-gatherer background. And so it's really much more simple than following, a blood-type diet. These are fad diets. These are diets that are used for commercial reasons predominantly, and you have to be aware of them. So So, you know, for 99.5% of our human history, we were hunter-gatherers. And it's really just in the last 10,000 years where we've started consuming more plant-based foods. It's these plant-based foods that we're eating today, for most of us, are very, very new in our diet. The
exclusion
would be berries and leafy greens.
Right. When we think of human history and we think back to we developed agricultural practices, we had the agricultural revolution to bring some, structure to our nomadic life, and then we're like, you know what, if we plant this field full of grains and then we could harvest it every year and we'll supplement our diet with what we take from, you know, the river or the oceans, and this will be great. But it's, for beyond that, I mean, we were, as you said, we hunted meat, we gathered nuts and fruits, but we certainly didn't plant fields of grain, harvest them, turn them into flour and bread. That's a recent evolution.
In terms of our evolution, it's a blink of an eye.
I mean,
it happened yesterday, basically. You know, it really didn't. It hasn't been very long since we've been consuming lots and lots of wheat, oats, barley, you know, whatever the case may be. This is new to us. And archaeologists actually discovered that during that era of human history, when we invented agriculture, that's when they start to see diseases creep up in the human body. This is when you start to see that we shrunk about 6 inches in size. Our lifespan actually decreased from 26 years to 19 years. You start to see the signs of anemia, osteoporosis, infectious diseases. Our brain size actually decreased after agriculture. So you see a lot of problems creeping up in the human body after we invented agriculture.
Pam Colleen is a nutritional consultant and healthy living advocate joining us on the program, and today talking about fad diets and what to look out for. So when we come back, we'll wrap things up, and I'll get Pam's insights on if you're trying to maybe lose some weight, or just even if you find yourself at a comfortable weight, how do you make sure you're eating healthy with most meals? I know everyone can't do it 24/7, 365 days a year, but as long as you do it, it seems for most meals, you'll have not only a healthy body, but as Pam points out, healthy brain, which is often overlooked in our quest to become, bikini model perfect. We forget the most important organ in our body, and that's our brain, making sure, and our diet. So much of our energy and so much of our nutrition has to go feed our brain. 10:48 is our time. My name's Tom McConnell. Pam Colleen joins us when we come back for one final segment here on News Talk 610 CKTV. 10:53 is our time. Nutritional consultant, healthy living advocate, Pam Colleen joins us on the program. And Miss Elsa, how are you?
I'm fine. Such an interesting topic. I've always been interested in good eating and proper nutrition. What I wanted to ask Pam about is her feeling about supplements.
Oh, you know, great question. What I try to encourage people to do is to get the bulk of all of their nutrients from foods. And so supplements, unfortunately, people are taking a lot of supplements and don't really know what their problems really are. So they're taking these supplements blindly. And I find a lot of people are taking supplements, and the supplements can actually interfere with their health if they don't really know where their deficiencies and toxicities lie. So when I work with people one-on-one, I put them on supplements only after I determine where their deficiencies and toxicities are, and then my goal is to get them off the supplements, that we should not have to stay on supplements long-term simply because, you know, our ancestors didn't use supplements. The only supplements they would have used would have been, perhaps you could consider organ meats as a supplement because those were the most nutrient-dense parts of the animals, and they used them very medicinally, very carefully, because these were considered sacred foods. And then they would have used things like seaweed in order to get the iodine. So possibly those two categories could have been considered supplements. But they certainly didn't have supplements like we know them today, and we shouldn't really need to rely on supplements for good health. So I use them short-term only until people restore their biochemistry, and then when they restore their biochemistry, they should totally rely on healthy diet and lifestyle in order to maintain that healthy biochemistry.
You're probably not located near St. Catharines.
She's in London.
In London, yep. Too bad.
That's okay. I work with people all over the world. I can do it long-term, long distance. It's not a problem. But
you can. Now, how would one do that if, say one wanted to have an assessment? I mean, I feel I'm a healthy person, but, excuse me, I do take supplements, And I've probably been wasting a lot of dollars.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if I would call it a waste. It's probably more like an experiment, because people, when they do find the right supplement regimen, it can be very, very beneficial. But it's just without knowing the underlying biochemical imbalances, it's very difficult to know which supplements to take. And that's what I try and do to save people a lot of money and time and grief, is to try to say, okay, what are the biochemical imbalances and how do you replenish them with which specific supplements, so they're targeted for you. And that is a very, very helpful for people in the end. But, you know, my website is just www.pamkilleen.com, K-I-L-L-E-E-N, and I have lots and lots of information on that website to help people get started.
K-I-L-L-E-E-N.
PamKilleen.com. Right. And Elsa, if anyone wants any questions, and let me just point this out, Pam mentioned the website, PamKilleen.com. If you miss it or you couldn't write it down, send me an email and I'll gladly send you the link.
No, that's all right. Yeah. I've written it down here. And now you have one book so far that you've published?
Actually, I've got a couple of books out. The first one was called The Great Bird Flu Hoax, and now this one is called Addiction, the Hidden Epidemic, and it's down at your Chapters there in St. Catharines at Fairview Mall.
One of my favorite
down
stores.
There.
Also, I think one of the things I've heard you speak several times about getting away from wheat.
Yes. You know, really, when our ancestors would have eaten any kind of grain, they had to have some preparation in terms of being able to deal with the anti-nutrients that are in grains. And so grains ideally need to be soaked and fermented prior to consuming them. Plant-based foods have poisons in them. You know, it's just inherent to the nature of the plant. And so it's far better for most, you know, vegetables, for example, and all grains and legumes, they need some form of preparation, some form of soaking and or fermentation.
Elsa, I got to leave it there. Pam, I got to leave it there.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right, Pam, always a pleasure. Great thought-provoking discussion today on the right diet for you. And I love the, you know, your theme is always, listen, it's one thing to, you know, to want to be in shape, but don't forget your brain. Mm-hmm. Your brain, I mean, if we're not happy but we're skinny, what's the point?
That's right. Got to be happy, Tom.
Got to be happy. I mean, addiction and mental illness and all these mental disorders, and a lot of them, you know, we can start with good nutrition to get us back on track. And so therefore, make sure, and I love the point, make sure that your diet is a long-term sustainable diet that other societies have based upon. No society is based upon veganism.
No, not at all.
And we've experimented with thousands of societies. No one has survived on veganism. Pam, always a pleasure. Take care.
Thank you so much, Tom.
Pam Killeen, nutritional consultant and healthy living advocate, I like to call her. Website, once again, PamKilleen.com, or send me an email in case you missed it, can't write it down, don't have time, you're in the car. Just send me an email and I'll send you to her website, and there, any contact info. But lots of great stuff to digest. Quick break in the program. When we'll come back, the...